Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the 1951-1952 Jack Benny season from 60 years ago. This is the 10th episode of the season. And what a deal. Out of these 10 episodes, we're only missing three of them. I mean, wow. What is that? Almost 30% of the episodes we're missing. But anyway, it gets better. There's only going to be two more missing episodes the whole season, so we certainly aren't missing as many. What a terrible season to be missing episodes for, though. In this episode, you're going to have a lot of fill spread out throughout the episode. And, of course, I've talked about how previous seasons, for the last, 5 years or whatever, you haven't been able to have that. Phil's only been available for, like, the first 10 minutes of the episode. And so oftentimes he'd only have 2 minutes and then he'd be gone the rest of the episode because he had to rush over and get to his studio to film, record his show. But I just love this season because that's not the case. Now his show's on a half hour later. And that's not even the big deal. The big deal is they are transcribing the shows, so they could pretty much record, I believe, both shows whenever they wanted to. So they could definitely make it so there was no conflict with Phil's time. And it's interesting how some of the episodes use him just a little bit, like they did previous seasons, and some of the episodes use him a lot. And I'm wondering if this was the writers sort of saying, well, we've got years left to us with Phil. We need to, ease him into doing more stuff on the show because we don't want to change the whole format of the show or anything. So I could definitely see them thinking that way. I wonder how it would have been different if they would have known this would be Phil's last season. I have a feeling it would have featured a lot more Phil than we do. But this episode's great. And Phil has some great bits throughout the episode. In fact, he's on the very, very beginning of the episode and way towards the end of the episode as well, and then a few times in the middle. So he definitely fills out this whole episode. Dennis does a great job in this episode. Lots of voices going on and things. Just a fun episode with pretty much just the immediate cast. And I love episodes like this. So I hope you enjoy it, and we will see you next time. We get, I believe, next time we have Dennis's mother visiting Verna Felton, so I'm going to focus on Verna Felton for the podcast next Sunday. Enjoy this episode, but first, a message. Well, it's time for our weekly request for donations to our podcast. Remember, the podcast can't function without getting donations. It's just too much money to run the thing with the thousands and thousands of listeners we have who are downloading all our shows. And so the bandwidth does cost money. And instead of coming at you once a year and begging and being all nervous about whether I'm going to get enough money that way, I'm going to come at you once a week. So this is my weekly request. Please send donations to buckbennyotr@gmail.com. That's my PayPal account. If you don't know how to do that, you can simply go to Google, type in Buck Benny or Jack Benny Podcast, and mine will be the first one on the list of podcasts, and you click on that, and the very first part of my homepage says make donations, and then you can make whatever donation you feel comfortable with. People have donated as little as $2 and as much as $150. Anywhere in there would be wonderful. I'm so thankful for all the folks that have donated to keep this podcast running. And if you want to send like a payment, check, money order, cash, whatever, then just email me at buckmennyotr@gmail.com, and I will send you back my address so that you can mail me any donations you have you would like to. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for donating. And we'll be back next week to ask again sometime for your donations. Thank you.
The Jack Benny Program, presented by Lucky Strike. And now a word of interest to smokers. For years you've heard talk, double talk, words about noses, words about throats, empty promises. Cigarette advertising is filled with them. Now this smokescreen of double talk is swept away by facts, not claims. Facts. The facts are that Lucky's fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco goes into a cigarette that's made better, that's fully packed, that has no annoying loose ends to spoil the taste. A cigarette that's made better in every way. Yes, the facts are that Lucky Strike, by a wide margin, is the best made of all five principal brands of cigarettes. Facts proven by a month-after-month quality comparison based on tests certified to be impartial, fair, and identical. And these tests, these facts, are verified by leading laboratory consultants. For example, Foster D. Snell Incorporated of New York City reports, "In our opinion, the properties measured are all important factors affecting the taste of cigarette smoke. We conclude that Lucky Strike is the best made of the five major brands." Yes, Lucky's taste better. Always so mild, so smooth, so firm and fresh, with better taste in every puff. So prove to yourself the proven facts. Don't be misled by the smokescreen of claims made by other cigarettes. Remember the facts and enjoy really fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco in the cigarette that's made better. The cigarette that tastes better. Lucky Strike. Try a carton today.
Be happy, go lucky, go Lucky Strike today.
Okay, Phil. Phil, okay, hold it. Hold it, Phil. Hold it. Stop it.
What's wrong now, Jackson?
Nothing. We've rehearsed enough. We ought to relax a little before we go on the air.
Yeah, we'll be on in 10 minutes.
Don, I want to talk to the audience before we go on the air. So when the studio fills up, let me know, will you? I'll be in my dressing room.
Okay, Jack.
This way for the Jack Benny Program. Don't crowd, please. Single file coming through the door, please.
Come on, Annabelle. We want to get seats down in front so Mr. Benny can hear me laugh at his jokes.
Okay, Uncle Rochester. How come Mr. Benny gave you the day off?
Day off? When you hear the jokes I have to laugh at, I'm working, honey. I'm working.
Do I have to laugh too, Uncle Rochester?
Yeah. I'll nudge you with my elbow. If it's a little joke, you just giggle.
Uh-huh.
And if Mr. Benny tells a big joke, you laugh real loud.
Well, what'll I do if it's kind of a medium joke?
You don't tell them that way, honey. They're either good or bad. But don't worry, I'll give you the elbow. Now follow me. There are two seats in the second row.
Say, Phil, I want to ask you something. Your orchestra was beginning to sound pretty good, and then all of a sudden you took the harp out of the band. Why did you do that?
I had to get rid of that harp, Jackson.
Why?
I was afraid that someday Remley might wake up, look through it, and say, "Holy smoke, I'm in again."
Well, that's ridiculous. A harp wouldn't make him think he was in jail.
Oh, no. 2 months ago, he cut 3 of the strings with a hacksaw.
No.
Then he climbed through, the spotlight hit him, and he yelled, "Don't shoot, I give up."
Well, that's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever... Come in. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. I want to talk to you about one of the jokes I have in the script. I don't understand it.
Which one?
Oh, this one right here on page 4. You see?
Dennis, that's a very simple joke. So you say to me, "Mr. Benny, did you hear about the lumberjack who was always chasing girls?" I say, "No." And you say, "He was sort of a timber wolf." Get it?
I wish I was taller. Those jokes go over my head.
You're lucky, kid. It hit me right in the face.
Look, Dennis, when we come to the joke, I'll just throw you the lead, and you say he was a timber wolf. That's all.
Okay, but if it doesn't get a laugh, you'll hear from my mother.
Oh, get out of here, will
you? Hey, I'm going too, Jackson. Cheerio. Yeah.
Those two make a nice pair. Bourbon and water on the brain. Well, sometimes I wonder... Hello? Long distance? Yeah, she's here. I'll call her. Oh, Mary! Mary!
Yes, Jack?
Would you come into my dressing room?
Okay, but you'll have to leave the door open.
Now, don't be silly. You're wanted on the phone.
Oh.
It's long distance, Plainfield, New Jersey.
Gee, it must be Mama.
It's a fine time to call, 5 minutes before my broadcast.
Well, that's all right. She never listens to it anyway.
Your mother.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mama. Well, I'm fine. Gee, it's nice of you to call me. What? When we go on the air, you want me to say, Papa, dinner is ready? But why do you want me... Oh, he's in the living room and you're not talking to him.
Well, that's the silliest...
Oh, quiet, Jack. What'd you say, Mama? Oh, Babe has a new boyfriend? He does? Well, he certainly is industrious.
What is it, Mary? What is it?
My sister Babe has a new boyfriend. He has two jobs.
Two jobs?
What kind of work does he do, Mama? Oh.
What is it, Mary? What does he do?
Well, during the day, he drives a garbage truck, and at night, he's a test pilot in an Airwick factory. Well, goodbye, Mama. Thanks for calling.
You know, Mary, your mother...
Well, Jack, we'll be on the air in 5 minutes. If you want to talk to the audience, you better get started.
Okay. Everybody on stage.
Well, it won't be long now, Annabelle.
You know, Uncle Rochester, Mr. Benny don't look so very old. I think he's tall, cute, and handsome.
You're looking at Mr. Harris, honey. His hair is curly.
Well, what kind of hair has Mr. Benny got?
Mr. Benny's hair is... Uh-oh. I'm in for it. I've still got it in my pocket. Here he comes now, honey. Remember, laugh when I give you the elbow.
Well, Jack, we'll be on the air in 5 seconds.
5 seconds.
Stand by, everybody. Take it, Phil. The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a man who was born in February, studied economics in March, was able to retire in April, and here he is, Jack Benny!
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and achoo! Gee, I hope I'm not catching cold. Darn that Rochester. And Don, I think your introduction was a little bit exaggerated. However, I will admit that at the age of 6, I did have a little money, but I earned it. As a matter of fact...
Well, say, Mr. Benny, did you hear the one about the lumberjack?
Not yet, Dennis. Later. Anyway, when I was a kid, Don... When I was a kid, Don, I had to work pretty hard.
Well, you're not the only one, Jackson. When I was 18 months old, my picture was in every magazine in the country.
So what?
Well, it wasn't easy for an 18-month-old kid to pose for all them ads.
What ads?
I was the baby of distinction.
Phil.
I was the only kid in town who had a diaper with a hip pocket.
All right. Now, look at kids. We have a very important play to do tonight, so let's get started.
What's it going to be, Jack?
Well, Mary, since we're at the height of the football season, I think that tonight we should do our version of that exciting play.
I'm sorry, honey. My elbow slipped.
We will do our version... Our version of that famous Columbia picture, that exciting epic of the gridiron, Saturday's Hero. Now, this play will go on immediately after we... Come in. Yes?
Mr. Benny, is it true that you wrote a song?
Yes, I did, and it has a wonderful title. It's called When You Say I Beg Your Pardon, Then I'll Come Back to You.
Yeah, that's the one. Do you mind if I do it?
Why, no, not at all. Are you a singer?
No, I'm an electric organ.
What? Hold it. An electric organ? That's awful.
Well, it ain't bad when you consider I ain't even plugged in.
Oh! What a silly guy. Oh, Dennis.
Oh, did you hear the one about the lumberjack who was always chasing girls?
Not yet. Sing your song first.
Oh, okay.
He has one joke and he can't wait. Dennis, very good. You sang that beautifully. Now, Dennis, now.
Oh, boy, here it comes. Say, Mr. Benny, did you hear about the lumberjack who was always chasing girls?
No, Dennis. What about the lumberjack who was always chasing girls?
His name was Mr. Wolf, and he was full of timber.
What?
He doesn't get it, folks. Mr. Wolf, timber.
Dennis, stop wagging your tail and sit down. We rehearsed it for 4 days, and then he gets it wrong. Oh, well. And now for our play, Take It Down.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you our version of that thrilling Columbia picture, Saturday's Hero, a saga of college life on the gridiron. Curtain, music.
This is the story of thousands of stalwart young athletes who every week during the autumn of the year give their all on the football fields of the nation for the glory of their alma maters. These are Saturday's heroes. My name is Steve. Steve Krasinski-Vichelkovsky. I was the star quarterback at James Madison High School in Passaic, New Jersey. In my final high school game, I caught the opening kickoff and ran it back 98 yards for a touchdown. The crowd went wild. The rooting section stood up and began to cheer for me.
Krasinski-Vichelkovsky! Krasinski-Vichelkovsky!
When they finished, we were in the third quarter. I made one spectacular play. I kicked a field goal from the 16-yard line. This wouldn't have been unusual, except that the fullback was still holding the ball as it went between the goalposts. The crowd went wild, and the fullback was a little sore, too. Again, they started to cheer.
K-R-A-C-I-N-S.
It was then that I decided to change my name to Smith. Steve Smith. When I graduated from high school, I had offers to play football for many colleges. Washington and Lee. William and Mary. David and Bathsheba. But I finally decided to accept a scholarship to Craig University. So early that fall, I found myself in the registrar's office, where the dean's secretary was filling out my entrance application.
Now, let's see, Steve Smith. Oh, here's your card. Now, tell me, what is your height?
5'11".
Your weight?
173.
Color of your eyes? Oh, they're blue, aren't they?
Bluer than the coach at USC.
Now, what career do you expect to follow upon graduation?
I'm going to be a psychiatrist.
What made you decide to become a psychiatrist?
Last month, my uncle died and left me a couch.
Well, that's all the questions, and... Oh, just one second. You're here on a football scholarship, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. In that case, you'll be provided with tuition, room and board, and you'll be given $100 a month to spend.
Do I have to spend it?
No. Now, of course, you and all the other football players will have to earn this money.
I understand. What will my job be?
Well, in the dean's office, there's an 8-day clock.
And I'm supposed to wind it?
No, the fullback winds it. Your job is to see that he does.
Under the burden of this assignment, I began my first year at Craig University. I'll never forget the day I met our famous football coach. I remember how he walked into the dressing room and said...
All right, you men. I want all the linemen to go out and practice tackling. The ends brush up on pass receiving. Halfbacks will put in 2 hours each bucking the line. The fullback will spend the whole day trying to kick field goals. And you're playing quarter, aren't you?
Yes, sir. What shall I do?
Scratch my back.
This was a thrilling moment for me. At last I had met that great coach, Itchy Day. As I stood there scratching his back, he looked at me and yelled...
Do it again, harder, harder, do it again, harder, harder.
Now, wait a minute, Coach, I don't want to do this. I was a big high school football star.
Ah, yes, but you're in college now and everybody starts from scratch. And another thing, we observe strict training here.
Yes, sir?
Yes, that means no parties, no dancing, and no dates with girls.
But, Coach, if we can't date the girls, don't the girls get lonesome?
No, some lumberjack keeps chasing them.
What?
All through our freshman year, Coach Day kept us in rigid training. He was a strict disciplinarian, and when it came to football, he was a perfectionist. Other coaches trained their players by having them throw forward passes through an automobile tire. Coach Day used a lifesaver. With my glasses, that was a cinch. We finished our season unbeaten, and to celebrate our success, the college had a big dance for all the players. It was then that I saw her.
Hello, handsome.
She was beautiful, and I had a hunch she was popular, too. She was wearing 164 fraternity pins. No dress, just fraternity. She smiled and came jingling towards me. Before I knew it, we were dancing together.
Gee, you dance swell.
Well, thanks. Say, you're on the football team, aren't you?
Uh-huh. How did you know?
You're stepping on my feet with your spiked shoes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gee, you're a beautiful girl. You know, I wish you and I could...
Wait a minute. Do you mind if I say something?
No.
Papa, dinner is ready.
That made me admire her even more. For though she was the most popular girl in school, she still thought of her poor, hungry father in Plainfield. I didn't see her again till the following fall, right before our first game with Powell University. I'll never forget that day. As our team came out on the gridiron, the huge throng cheered, and our glee club sang our school song.
You gotta be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girl. In spite of all $1 million can do, a tackle or two will mean more to you. The fact that you are rich or handsome won't get you anything in curves. You gotta be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girl. You gotta smoke that fine tobacco to really know why a lucky is best. You gotta light a lucky, then as you puff, you'll know sure enough that no puff is rough. A lucky strike is better tasting. A lucky strike wins every test. You gotta smoke that fine tobacco to really know why a lucky is best. L-S-M-F-T, L-S-M-F-T for me. Lucky, lucky, rah-rah-rah, buy a carton, sis-boom-bah. A lucky strike is better tasting. It's round and firm and fully packed. A lucky strike is made much better. That's not a claim, no sir, that is a fact. And we can prove it. All together, let's be happy and go lucky strike.
Then the game started. Kickoff, but was thrown for a loss. On our next two plays, we were stopped cold. The opposing team had the biggest line in football. His name was Don Wilson. Once I ran around his end and was out of bounds by 10 yards. But although he was my opponent, I had to admire his ability.
Nice tackle, Wilson.
It was tough stopping you.
I like that football uniform you're wearing.
Thank you.
I've never seen such big shoulders. What do you got them padded with?
My stomach.
The game remained a scoreless tie until the last quarter, when I intercepted a forward pass and ran it back for a touchdown. The crowd went wild.
K-R-A-Z-I-N-S.
I changed it. It's Smith now.
We won that game 7-0, and the next three games, too. But then I ran into trouble. Because of all the time I spent on the football field, I neglected my studies. Of all my subjects, I was poorest in Latin. And one day in class, I was forced to admit to the Latin professor that I hadn't studied the lesson.
I'm sorry, Professor. I am not prepared.
Oh, for shame.
Perhaps if you ask me another question, I might be able to answer it.
Very well. I'll translate this. When Julius Caesar left Egypt to return to Rome, he said to Cleopatra, Hox imperis evictum quo fasheri posit pluribus fidelium Marcus agrarium.
I don't know, Professor. What does hox imperis evictum quo fasir posit pluribus fidelium Marcus agrarium mean?
Wipe your chin and try that again.
What does hox imperis evictum quo fasir posit pluribus fidelium Marcus agrarium mean?
When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you.
Oh.
And I hope you'll be better prepared for tomorrow's lesson.
Yes, sir. What are we studying tomorrow?
The works of Augustus the Fifth, Horatio the Fifth, Octavius the Fifth, and Cassius the Fifth. Love them fifths.
I studied my Latin hard, and he finally passed me with a mark of 86 proof. He had grown into a professor of distinction. Then came the day of our final game of the season. We were undefeated, and a victory now would mean the conference championship. Every seat in the stadium was filled. What a thrill I felt as the pregame ceremony started and our school band took the field. All eyes were on the band, dressed in their gleaming uniforms, as they marched around the field playing... It sounded great because this time he was plugged in. Then the game started, and it was a brutal, hard-fought contest. The first half ended in a scoreless tie. We went back to our dressing room, and our coach looked at us and said, This wasn't a commercial. We were holding secret signal practice. Then the second half started. The game remained deadlocked until the fourth quarter when we got a break. I intercepted a pass. I broke away from the safety man, had a clear field for a touchdown when I suddenly realized it was all in vain. There was a handkerchief on the play. Angrily, I rushed up to the referee and said,
Did you drop your handkerchief?
Ooh, dinner!
What's the penalty for?
Your backfield was in motion.
What?
You never should have taken those rumba lessons from Arthur Murray.
The game resumed, and with 1 minute left to go, the crowd and my producer were going wild. I received the ball and faded way back and threw a long forward pass to the fullback. He grabbed it in midfield. He evaded two tacklers and headed for the goal line. He crossed the 30, the 20, the 10, over the goal line, into the end zone, up into the stand. And then he started chasing the girls. It was at that moment that I realized that he was the lumberjack. So it was he and not I who was Saturday's hero.
Jack, we'll be back in just a moment, but first...
Lucky's taste better. Yes, there's better taste in Lucky Strike because Lucky's fine, mild, good-tasting tobacco goes into a cigarette that is the best made of all five principal brands. These are not just claims. They're facts that prove Lucky's are made better in every way. Facts verified by leading laboratory consultants. One of these, Froling and Robertson of Richmond, Virginia, reports, It is our conclusion that Lucky Strike is the best made of these five major brands. So don't be misled by the smokescreen of claims and empty promises made by other cigarettes. Remember the proven facts of Lucky Strike quality. Enjoy the mild, rich taste of fine tobacco in the cigarette that smokes smoother because it's made better. The cigarette that tastes better, Lucky Strike. You'll prove it yourself by trying a carton of Lucky's today.
Be happy, go lucky, be happy, get better taste. Be happy, go lucky, go lucky, strike today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the 10th program of this series, and we'll be with... Oh, get that, will you, Mary?
Okay. Hello? Yes, this is Mary. Oh, Papa, you're having dinner at home? Then you heard me. Papa, it's silly for you and Mama not to talk to each other. Oh, all right, if you want me to, I'll do it. Jack, let me at that microphone.
Huh?
Mama, pass Papa the mashed potatoes. Good night, Mama. Good night, Papa.
Good night, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, our stockpile of blood plasma has been gravely depleted by the demands of the Korean campaign. And it's imperative that action be taken to ensure an adequate supply ready for immediate use. So please go to the blood bank in your cities and contribute. It's needed badly. This is an urgent request. In the Los Angeles area, the telephone number is Dunkirk 45261. Dunkirk 45261. Remember, the gift of blood is a gift from the heart. This is Don Wilson reminding you to listen to Your Hit Parade with Guy Lombardo every Thursday night, presented by Lucky Strike. Consult your newspaper for time and station. Stay tuned for the Amos and Andy Show, which follows immediately. The Jack Benny program is heard by our armed forces overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the CBS Radio Network.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, and first in television, presents the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. For your enjoyment, here is the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, and yours truly, Bill Foreman. Next Saturday, the University of Southern California plays UCLA in their big traditional football game. The whole thing was almost canceled out, thanks to Phil and Frankie. But more about this later. Now a word from RCA Victor. The years RCA has spent developing the field of electronics, the untold millions of dollars RCA has spent in research, have resulted in discovery of a completely new circuit system for television home receivers. This new circuit system, with an electronic supercharger, now brings you television with picture power. And now, RCA Victor is the first to bring you 21-inch supersets with picture power. There's the RCA Victor Suffolk, the Clarendon, Donnelly, and Rockingham, for example. Four magnificently styled 21-inch supersets. And each brings in the sharpest, most detailed big pictures you've ever seen. There's virtually no interference in any television area, city or country, thanks to picture power. They're superb, one and all. See them for yourself. And remember, when you buy RCA Victor television, ask about the RCA Victor factory service contract. When you buy RCA Victor television with RCA factory service, you get television's greatest combination, offered by RCA Victor, cornerstone of home entertainment for three generations. And now the stars of the RCA Victor program, Alice Faye and Phil Harris. For the past few weeks, Alice has noticed that Phil has been very preoccupied. Lately, it has gotten to the point where he doesn't seem to know what's going on around him. He's in a daze, absent-minded, and being a little concerned, Alice has decided to talk to him about it.
Phil? Phil? Phil!
Phyllis, will you answer the phone? How can you stand that shrill ringing?
Daddy, it's Mother calling.
Well, bring the phone over here. I'll talk to her.
Oh, Phil, I'm right here, and I want to talk with you.
I haven't got time now, miss. My wife's on the phone.
Phil, I'm your wife.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Hiya, Sophie.
Sophie? Oh, Phil, what's wrong with you?
He's gone nuts. That miniature brain is finally snapped. I told you the day you married him,
you
Alice.
Keep out of this, Willie. I'm sorry, Alice. It's just that I got something on my mind.
Well, Phil, what's bothering you?
I don't know. I'm dissatisfied lately. I'm not happy with my radio show.
Well, you're not the only one, Philip. Sponsor's unhappy with it. NBC's unhappy with it. The public's unhappy with it. All right.
Now, leave me alone, will you?
Yes, Uncle Willie. You stop picking on our daddy. He's just nervous because he's overworked.
That's telling him, Alice.
After all, there aren't very many men who work as hard for a half hour every week as Daddy does. Yeah, do you think it's pleasant for him to have to come down to the studio every Sunday afternoon when he could be out playing polo?
Polo? Oh, honey, that's a typographical error. It's supposed to be pool.
Leave it like it.
Now, Phil, why don't you like our radio show?
Oh, honey, don't say that. I like it. I love it. But it's just that I miss the thrill and excitement of playing to a large theater full of people, like I used to do when I was in vaudeville.
What's vaudeville, Daddy?
Vaudeville, my child, was a form of entertainment that they say was killed by a lot of corny acts that nobody will ever see again unless they have a television set.
Gee, that reminds me. It's time for the Continental. Come on, Phyllis. Let's go in and watch it on our new RCA Victor 17-inch picture power television set. Yes! The set that brings in a good picture even if you live in a fringe area.
This is made possible by the electronic genius of the RCA engineers.
Thank you and bless your commercial little heart.
I never knew you were in vaudeville, Philip.
Never knew? Are you kidding? I've been in the show business since I was a baby. My mother was in it before me. My grandmother was... Look, I don't want to brag, but Grandma was the first Indian girl to appear in burlesque. Mamusa was the original Cherokee strip. Hey, how'd you like that one, Willie? Cherokee strip.
Oh, Philip, you are a wit.
Think so?
Mm-hmm. You have a way of taking an old joke and making it sound just like an old joke.
This restless feeling is just a stage you're going through.
Now, wait a minute. No, it isn't, because I was talking to Frankie the other day, and he thinks I ought to get back in front of the public, too. Said I could make a lot of money on personal appearances, and he's right, because... Come in. After all, honey, I'm a big name. I'm in demand. I could
Hiya, Curly.
Hiya. What's the matter with you? You look tired.
I am. I'm exhausted. On the way over, I picked up 4 college girls, gave them a lift.
Well, why should that tire you out?
I haven't got a car. It ain't easy carrying those dames piggyback.
Wait a minute. That's
Frankie, where did you ever meet college girls?
On the campus at the University of Southern California.
Oh, now, what were you doing at the university?
Oh, Alice, haven't you heard? He's majoring in French. He wants to be able to read the labels on cognac bottles.
Please, Curly. No levity, or I won't tell you what I was doing out there. I won't tell you the good news.
Good news? What good news?
You've been wanting to earn some money making personal appearances, so I talked to the dean at the university and got you a job.
No kidding. What kind of a job?
You're going to do a benefit at a football rally.
Benefit? Wait a minute. I ain't working for nothing.
You better take it, Curly. You're not much in demand. I had a tough time selling you at that price.
I think they got a lot of nerve. That's what I...
Oh, Phil, you should feel flattered they asked for you.
They didn't exactly ask for him. They wanted you, Alice, and I told them you wouldn't appear any place without your straight man.
Oh, they wanted me, huh? Well, when is this football rally, Frankie?
It's tonight.
Oh, what's the rally for?
It's for the USC-UCLA game.
Stop spelling things out in front of me. I'm old enough to know. Guys do that all the time.
Curly, those are 2 different colleges.
Oh.
It's the University of Southern California that wants you to appear at their rally. I think you ought to show up. You'll get a lot of publicity.
Yeah, but I ain't getting no money.
Oh, Phil, don't be so mercenary. After all, what's money?
Money, my dear, is the stuff that your side of the mattress is so loaded with that when we go to bed, I'm sleeping 3 decks below you.
Is her side really that high, Curly?
One night she fell off and broke 3 of my ribs. No, the other side. I sleep on my right. You're not supposed to sleep on your left side.
Will you please stop it? Now, stop. Look, Phil, I'm serious about tonight. I think you ought to show up.
Yeah, it'll be a nice gesture for those college kids. Besides, they're sending a student committee over to see you this afternoon.
Look, Remley, I don't care who they're sending over. I ain't appearing at no rally for free, and I'm not going, and nobody's going to make me.
Hey, that may be the committee.
I certainly hope it is. I'll tell them off. Remley, you better take Alice in the other room. There might be bloodshed. You got a lot of nerve asking me to come down here, trying to get me to go to a rally and not even offering me a cent. You guys are wasting your time. I ain't going.
Hello, Curly. We're from Southern California. And... Oh, my, but you're big, strong, attractive.
Don't try nothing, lady. I'm 100 years old. What's the matter with you? I ain't working for nothing, and ain't nobody gonna...
Oh, Laurie, isn't he adorable?
Oh, yes, and so handsome.
And there'll be 200 beautiful girls at the rally, and they'll all be fighting to dance with
him. I don't care
if
there's gonna... Two 200 beautiful girls?
At least 200. What do you say, Curly?
Wait, I'll get my ride, you tall, and go with you.
Oh, I knew you wouldn't disappoint us, you lovely man.
Hey, Curly, was that the committee? Who?
is this?
It's a red-eyed owl that just flew in. They're measuring for the mantelpiece. We're going to have them stuffed.
My name is Frankie Remley, girls.
You mean you're the Frankie Remley? Famous guitar virtuoso, star of the RCA Victor radio program, and discoverer of such great personalities as Phil Harris, Alice Faye, and Bing Crosby?
Wherever did you get that impression of me?
That's what your card said, the one you left with the dean.
Frances.
Curly. She must be thinking of another Frankie Remley. I wouldn't have a card printed like that.
Oh, but you did. I have it right here with me.
Let me see that.
Curly, I give you my
word. Wyatt. Let me read that. Oh. Discoverer of Phil Harris, Alice Faye, and Bing Crosby. Also founder of the North Pole. Head brain surgeon at the Mayo Clinic. And co-designer of the non-skid rubber mat.
Well, if you read that much, you might as well finish it.
Well, that's all there is.
That's all? Why, that crooked printer, he left out chief of counter-espionage for His Majesty the Tsar. Heads shall roll for this, the salt mine...
Quiet, Rasputin! Look, kids, I'll be glad to appear for you tonight. By the way, who's sponsoring this rally?
The girls of Eta Sigma Pi.
Oh, good, good. Great audiences, them Greek waitresses. You know, they're a nice bunch of girls. They like me, too, you see, because I'm a big tipper, and I've never pinched a waitress while she's carrying a tray. I wouldn't think so. You know, I've always been... Sure.
Mr. Harris, Eta Sigma Pi is a sorority.
Oh, Eta. Oh, certainly, yeah. You see, it's been so long since I've been to college, I've forgotten about the one I belong to.
You belong to a sorority? Mr. Harris, are you sure you went to college?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fact is, Frank and I here were... We were classmates, weren't we, Frankie?
If you say so.
Well, what was the name of the college?
Oh, the name? Well, what was the name of that joint anyway, Remley?
Heidelberg.
That's it, Heidelberg.
Why did you go all the way to Germany to attend college?
Oh, at Heidelberg. That's where we went.
Well, why did you go to Germany to attend college?
We like warm beer. We might as well have missed it anyway. It didn't mean a thing, did it? We like warm beer.
Oh, Heidelberg has always sounded so romantic. Tell me, Mr. Harris, is it as romantic as they say?
Ah, Julie, but yeah. For romance, this is the place.
We was also on the football team. I was the head back.
You tell him, Weber.
I'm trying to feel. Shut up.
Oh, it really must have been exciting, Curly. I could see that you did a lot of dueling when you were there.
Dueling? What makes you say that?
Well, your face is full of saber scars.
Oh, yes, yes. Those are German scars.
Better known as American wrinkles.
Oh. I don't think that's funny, Mr. Remley. Curly doesn't have wrinkles.
Thank you, dear.
I only hope when my daddy reaches your age, he looks half as good.
Just for that, lady, I hope UCLA scores 8 touchdowns against your school in the first quarter.
Oh, I know you don't really mean that, Mr. Harris. Well, we have to run along now. Margie and I will pick you up at 7 o'clock and take you over to the rally.
Okay, girls, thank you. We'll see you at 7. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Curly.
Hey, Ram.
Hmm?
Aren't they cute children?
Yeah, adorable tots.
You know, Frankie, I'm only going tonight because I always get a big kick out of watching these youngsters enjoy themselves.
Me too. The fact that they happen to be pretty girls has nothing to do with it.
Heavens, no!
Well, Curly, now that you've decided to go, what excuse are you going to give Alice for changing your mind?
I don't have to make any excuses. I'll just tell her the truth. Come on, let's tell
her.
Oh, Alice!
What is it, Phil?
Oh, there you are. Look, honey, I've been thinking about that rally tonight.
So have I.
I've changed my mind about it.
So have I.
I seen the light and I'm gone.
I seen the girls and you ain't.
Oh, so you saw him, huh?
That's right, I saw him.
Hey, look, Alice, I'm not going just because there's going to be pretty girls there. What's the matter? Don't you trust me, honey?
Oh, of course I do, darling. If you want to go, you can go. Well, I trust you implicitly. I know you won't look at any of those girls because I'm going to be there with you to see that you don't.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be there, too. Oh, well, we'll have fun anyway.
Now, look, Phil, all they want from you is entertainment.
Hey, entertainment. Hey, I got to do... Hey, Ren, what do you think I ought to do when I get there?
Anything. Juggle, do card tricks, dance and play the spoons at the same time.
I'm not a dancer, I'm a singer.
All right, sing and play the spoons at the same time.
Look, I'm just going to sing, and incidentally, it's my new RCA Victor record, and I better rehearse it right now.
Would you?
Yeah. Just called up to tell you that I'm rugged but right, a rambling and a gambling man. I'm free every night. I eat a porterhouse steak 3 times a day for my board, more than any gal in this whole town can afford. I got a big electric fan to keep me cool when I sleep, my mattress stuffed with dollar bills to tickle my feet. My motto is love 'em and leave 'em and break 'em and leave 'em and break 'em and ride. I just called up to tell you that I'm rugged but right. My house was bought with pawn shop tickets, red, white, and blue. My clothes are made of tiger skins right out of the zoo. I got a lot of money in the bank, I made it myself. The hearts of all my girlfriends lying right on my shelf. The girls all stop and whistle every time I go by, but I'm pretty darn particular, I'm telling no lie. I'm in there wheeling and dealing and really appealing and high as a kite. Come on, let's fly together, 'cause I'm rugged but right. Up to tell you that I'm rugged but fat. You caused me plenty worry, put some gray in my hair. You got the lips that sunk the ships of England, France, and Peru. But I am like Napoleon, 'cause you're my Waterloo. I'd like a 15-minute intermission in you Ford V8. I'd love to make it longer, but I got a late date. My morals have always been gone with the wind, so let's breeze it tonight. I just called up to tell you that I'm rugged but right. Don't overdo it, 'cause I really overdoed it last night.
That was very nice, Curly.
Nice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the rally, don't sing so loud. You'll drown out the spoons. I didn't hear him at all.
Oh, Phil. Phil, do you think you ought to do that song tonight?
Why not? Honey, when them college girls hear me do that, they'll be drooling all over them chrysanthemums. Man, I'll curl their little bobby socks. I'll have them twisting and twirling.
Listen to this redskin rave. Oh, I can't stand any more of this. I'm going upstairs. And, Phil, with all those young college boys around, the girls aren't even going to look at a couple of old men like you and Frankie.
Curly, I don't like your wife's causticity. Doesn't befit her.
Well, she just had it made, and it looks a little bulky under there. It'll wear down. Don't worry about it. It'll be all right. You know something, Remley? I'm just thinking. You know that Alice is right?
Hmm?
Well, listen to me. Compared to those college kids, we're gonna look a little old.
We don't have to.
We don't. What do you mean?
When we go to the rally tonight, let's act like college kids. Let's dress and talk the way they do.
Yeah, it sounds very good. It's great. But how do college kids dress and talk?
Don't you remember? Our band used to play a lot of college dances.
That was 25 years ago.
So what? College kids are college kids. They don't change.
They don't change the talking, huh? Nah. Hey, then I got a great idea.
What's that?
You know something? I still have our old band outfits in the trunk upstairs. We can dress up in it.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Well, let's go get them, and away we go.
Phil? Phil, it's almost 7 o'clock. What's taking you fellas so long to get
dressed? We're all ready, honey. We're all ready. Coming right down. Hey, Remley. Yeah. Hey, let's show Alice what the well-dressed college man looks like.
Right.
Collegiate. Yes, we are collegiate. Nothing intermediate. We're collegiate. Rah, rah, rah. Oh, razzmatazz.
Oh, you fellas are kidding. What are you made up for? What on earth are you wearing?
Kidding, what's kidding? These are college clothes. Oh, no. Certainly, we've got the striped blazers, bell-bottom trousers, jazz bow ties, and the pork pie hats with the turned-up brim.
Not to mention our raccoon coats, two muted ukuleles, and a set of canoe cushions.
Any place with you looking like that.
Well, what's the matter with the way I look? This is my flaming youth outfit.
Oh, that's a novelty. A flaming youth outfit on a pile of old ashes. Take off those ridiculous raccoon coats.
We will not. Who ever heard of a college boy without a raccoon coat? You... Oh, Remley. Hmm. Hey, that must be the girls now. Now, look. Let's Charleston to the door and let them in, right?
Right.
Charleston.
Hurry up, brother. Miss Fay, call off your dogs. If either one of these shaggy mutts bites me, I'll sue you.
All right, wait a minute. We're not dogs. It's me and Mr. Remley.
How did you get so hairy?
It's not hair, it's raccoon fur.
Oh, when did that start growing on you?
Don't be a wise guy. We're dressed like this for a reason. We've been asked to appear at SC.
Well, it's about time the Sanitation Commission got after you.
Look, grocery boy, we're talking about the University of Southern California. Now beat it, will you? Because we want to
get... Hey, Curly, that must be our
date.
Julius, hey, get lost. We don't want the girls to see you.
What girls?
A couple of sorority girls are coming over to take us to the college.
You mean they're going to be seen in public with you two?
Of course.
These initiations is getting tougher every year. Poor girls do just
to... Will you be quiet, Julius? Hey, Remley.
Yeah.
Now open the door and remember, if we want to make an impression on these college girls, we got to act the part.
Okay.
Hello, Curly.
Strut on in, Sheba. Your chic is waiting for you.
Don't stand there, flappers. Black bottom over to your cake eaters.
Well, ain't they jazzy tonight?
Mr. Harris, what are those ridiculous outfits you and Mr. Remley are wearing?
Campus togs, baby, campus togs. Ain't they the cat's pajamas?
Cat's pajamas?
Yeah, that's college talk. Hey, lay a little of that talk on him, Remley.
Okie dokie, hot diggity dog, and so's your old man.
Not to mention 23 skidoo, oh, you kid, and tarara, boom, da.
Curly, you're going back a little too far.
Fella, surely you don't expect us to go out with you dressed like this.
There's nothing wrong with the way you're dressed. Come on, let's get started.
Yeah, we better hurry. On the way over, I want to stop at my bootlegger.
Remley, please.
I want to order some boots.
Oh, boots.
Well, I'm afraid we won't be able to take you. You see, we don't have room in our car.
Don't let it worry your pretty little head. I got a big Cadillac.
Oh, that ain't collegiate, fellas. You should have a hot rod.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, gee whiz, we gotta have a hot rod, but we ain't got one.
Well, I'll take care of that for you, Mr. Harris. Can you wait 15 minutes?
Yeah, we gotta wait for Alice to finish dressing anyway. Now, hurry it up, will you, Julius? Hey, in the meantime, we'll entertain the girls. You ready, Remley?
Yeah.
One, two.
You gotta be a football hero
to get along with a wonderful girl. And every girl.
Betty Coed has lips of red for Harvard. Betty Coed has eyes of blue for Yale.
Please, fellas, stop already, please.
Yes, yes, it's getting awfully late. Mr. Harris, why don't you and Mr. Remley wait for the hot rod, and Miss Fay will go ahead with us in our car?
No. Now, we got to do this right. Look, we'll all go in a hot rod as soon as Julius gets here. Hey, in the meantime, I'll keep you flappers amused with another funny story.
Oh, please, Phil, you've told us every Peaches Browning joke there is.
No. You see, honey, this one's about Gertrude Ederle. It seems that this dame was putting the grease on, getting ready to swim that channel. Hey, wait a minute. I'll tell it to you later. Hold it. That must be Julie's. Come on in, kids. Let's go out and pile in that hot rod. Come on, let's go.
Well, you're all set, Mr. Harris. I got your hot rod.
Good boy, Julius. Where is it?
Right here at the crib. How do you like it?
How'd it get hurt? What a broken down... Julius, that's my new Cadillac.
Looks good with the fenders off, don't it? I also took off the hood and removed the muffler.
Well, what did you do that for?
How else can you make a hot rod? Looks sporty, don't it?
Julius, you've got the top down.
What's wrong with that?
It's a sedan.
I know. It wasn't easy getting the top off. I had to do it with this can opener.
Oh, no. You little so-and-so, look what you did. You ruined it completely.
Don't get excited. I'll buy you a new can opener.
I had to break your...
That's the appreciation I get after fixing your car up nice and painting that snappy slogan on it.
What snappy slogan?
Climb in, Peaches. Here's your can.
Oh.
Well, that does it. We are not going with those two characters.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't be found dead with those two cornballs. Come on, girls. We'll go to the rally alone. Goodbye, Phil. See you in the morning.
But Alice, wait a minute. I'm not... Alice! Remley, they don't want us.
How do you like that? We get all dressed up for the occasion and no place to go, and we're just going to have to...
All right, take it easy. Take it easy, Frank. Hey, I'll tell you what. You still got them canoe cushions?
Yeah.
Well, then, come on, I'll take you for a paddle in MacArthur Park.
How cozy. But wait, I got a better idea.
What?
Let's go back in your house and make a batch of bathtub gin.
Jumping Jupiters, what a peachy idea. Ooh-wee.
Alice and Phil will be back in just a moment. Now you can enjoy the music you want when you want it. Now you can enjoy it at its best with RCA Victor's modern system of recorded music, the 45. The moment you listen to RCA Victor's 45 system of recorded music, you'll recognize in a flash the beauty of lifelike clarity and unblemished overtones. And you'll agree the 45 system sounds better. It plays easier, too. Take RCA Victor's new Victrola 45 personal phonograph, for example. It's versatile and practical. It's neat and compact. Why, the Victrola 45 personal phonograph even has a convenient carrying handle. And if you buy the Victrola 45 personal phonograph now, if you buy any RCA Victor instrument that plays 45s exclusively, you'll receive at no extra cost over $6 worth of record albums. So take advantage of this terrific bonus offer brought to you by RCA Victor, cornerstone of home entertainment for three generations.
You were a wonderful audience, folks. We're a little late. Thank you, and good night, everybody.
This program is produced and directed by Paul Phillips, concluded in today's cast with Barbara Eiler and Gloria Grant. Remember, whether you're buying a television set, a radio, a Victrola phonograph, or records, put your faith in the cornerstone of American home entertainment for three generations. RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in television.
Next, The Theater Guild stars Claudette Colbert and Gregory Ratoff on NBC.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another great episode of the Jack Benny Show from 70 years ago. I hope a lot of you tuned in on Tuesday for our Jack Benny Show. The card game at the beginning of that with Dennis and Phil and Jack, I mean, that was really something. And And Phil and Dennis were in wonderful form. So I hope you all listened to that and enjoyed it. Tonight, we have Arthur Q. Bryan making an appearance. And he is the voice of Elmer Fudd. He's also was on a lot of different radio shows. I think next month he's starting up as a regular on the great Gildersleeve shows we bring you. And then he becomes so popular on Gildersleeve that they decide to move him to Fibber McGee and Molly, as so many of their great voice talent heads off to World War II. I think he joins the cast of Fibber and Molly in like 43. Anyway, one of my favorite things, he starred on so many different old-time radio shows and, of course, the cartoons, but one of my favorites is listening to It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart, and with in the radio version, one of the radio versions, you have Arthur Q. Bryan playing the part of Clarence. So it just sounds for all the world like Elmer Fudd is an angel appearing with Jimmy Stewart, and so it just gives a whole weird twist to the whole It's a Wonderful Life presentation. Anyway, enjoy him in tonight's show when he appears. I think it's more towards the end, and enjoy him when he starts showing up on The Great Gildersleeve soon, and eventually will be showing up on Fibber McGee and Molly. But a great performer he was, and just a wonderful character and a wonderful voice he had, both as the Elmer Fudd character and with his own voice. So, appeared in many, many movies over time. Probably, I don't know about hundreds of films, but at least dozens and dozens of films, if not more. Anyway, enjoy this episode of The Jack Benny Show. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, and we will see you next time.
The Jell-O program, brought to you by Jell-O and Jell-O Pudding, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens a program with Jump for Joy. What rich, thrilling enjoyment you get from today's new Jell-O. Now made better than ever by Jell-O's wonderful locked-in flavor. Here's one of the biggest improvements ever made in gelatin desserts. A new scientific method by which Jell-O's full original goodness is locked right into the tiny Jell-O particles. The gelatin desserts you used to buy continually lost flavor during the days they spent in the package. They became flat and tasteless as time stole away their freshness. But the new Jell-O is different. Today, all of Jell-O's bright, tingling flavor is locked into Jell-O's crystal-like particles, locked in for keeps where time can't touch it, no matter how long your Jell-O remains in the package. Just prove it for yourself. Open a package of Jell-O. Notice there's no heavy, fruity aroma that tells of escaping flavor. Then dissolve the Jell-O, and presto, you unlock its captive delight, and out pours a delicious flood of flavor. Don't wait another day to try it, friends. Order several packages of the new Jell-O tomorrow. The flavor never goes away. We put it in, and it's there to stay. That was Jump for Joy, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, next Thursday is Thanksgiving, and no doubt most of you will have turkey for dinner.
That's right.
So this evening, without further ado, we bring you a chestnut for your dressing, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Jell-O again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, thanks so much for that introduction. It was not only topical, but floppical. Chestnut for your dressing.
Well, in my opinion, Jack, it was a very clever gag. I thought of it all by myself while I was shaving this morning.
And you didn't cut your throat? I can't understand it. Anyhow, Don, it'll soon be Thanksgiving, and I love you. By the way, would you and the little woman like to come over to my house next Thursday for a nice wild duck dinner?
Thanks, Jack. We'll be very glad to. Wild duck, huh?
Yep, I went hunting yesterday morning, and as usual, I brought home the limit. 3 ducks. Beauties, too.
But, Jack, the limit is 10 ducks.
Oh, I mean on one shot, Don. You see, I don't go out hunting and bang away like it's 4th of July, you know.
3 ducks with one shot. My goodness, I had no idea you were such an expert hunter.
Oh, sure, Don. For me, that's nothing, you know.
Well, I'd say that's darn good. By the way, Jack, what kind of a gun do you use?
My gun? Oh, it's just a plain, ordinary, double-breasted shotgun. It does the trick, though.
You mean double-barreled, don't you?
What? Oh, yes, double-barreled. It's a Westchester.
Well, this
I
is
never
certainly...
miss with it. You know, I really never miss it.
This certainly is news. Benny the Sportsman, tell me, what'd you get yesterday, mallards or canvasbacks?
I beg pardon, Don? What was that?
I said, what did you get, mallards or canvasbacks?
Yes, sir. But I want to tell you something, Don.
Well, what were they, mallards or canvasbacks?
They were ducks, quack, quack. If you don't want to come to dinner, say so. I suppose every time I shoot a duck, I have to go up to him and say, my name is Benny, what's yours? Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Well, I'm sorry, Jack. I didn't mean to...
Okay, forget it. But believe me, Don, there's no thrill in the world like getting out at 5 in the morning, hopping into that rowboat and waiting for those ducks to fly by.
Yes, there's no question about it. That's real excitement. By the way, Jack, do you use a retriever?
Well, I beg pardon, Don. Do I use a what?
A retriever, you know, a dog that swims out and gets the ducks after you shoot them.
A dog that swims. Say, that's an idea. That'll save Rochester from getting wet all the time. Wait till I tell him, huh?
Why, Jack, you don't mean to say that Rochester jumps into that cold water.
Yes, and he brings back those ducks without a tooth mark on them. Except once when I accidentally hit him on top of the head with an oar. Anyway, Don, be sure and come to dinner and you'll taste the finest. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Hello, Don. Hello, Mama.
Mama?
Yeah, she finally got a radio set.
Oh. Hello, Mama. Keep up the payments. Gee, now she can listen to us. Oh, say, Mary, I went out hunting yesterday and I brought you a little present. Here you are, some beautiful duck feathers. Here.
What do I want with duck feathers?
You can put them on a hat or something. What can I do with them?
Glue them on your chest. It's going to be a cold winter.
They'll just fit on my tattooed eagle. I can go along with a gag, sister. Anyway, if you don't want them, I'll give them to Dennis. He'll think of something.
Where'd you get those feathers anyway?
I told you, I went hunting yesterday. I go every year. Remember last year when, Paul, when you were with me?
Oh, yes. Did you tell Don what happened?
Never mind.
What was it, Mary?
Jack was in a rowboat when some ducks flew by, and boy, was he excited.
Oh.
So he pulled the trigger too quick, shot a hole in the boat, and came home with 18 trout.
Well, they were delicious. Fried in butter.
And the way you explained that hole to the owner of the boat.
Well, it could have happened.
It could not.
It could, too.
How can a boat be torpedoed in Lake Henshaw?
All right, forget it was years ago. And that's the last time I'll ever take you ducking. Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. Well, kids, here's your tickets. Front row center. Best in the house.
Tickets? What tickets?
Here, Mary, now look, hold them till Wednesday night and get there early. I don't want you to miss a thing.
Wait a minute, Phil. What are those tickets for?
Well, it says right there on them. And you guys don't think I can act, huh?
Well, I'll be darned. Get a load of this, fellas. The Hollywood Night School, third grade dramatic club, invite you to a special Thanksgiving play entitled The Courtship of Miles Standish.
Well, who are you, Phil? Miles Standish?
Now, let her read it. Go ahead, Mary.
This play stars Willie Shapiro as Miles Standish.
Hmm.
Butch Peterson as John Alden.
Go on.
And Philip Harris as Priscilla.
Priscilla.
That's me. I'm the heroine.
That's heroin. Heroin. So, Phil, Phil, you take the girls' part, eh?
Yeah, ain't that a novelty?
Well, not exactly, Phil. If you remember, I recently played the female lead in Charlie's Aunt.
Yeah, but you were an old bag. I'm young and tender.
Listen, Harris, I'll put on a sweater with you any day. Any day, brother.
The courtship of Miles Standish, eh? Say, that ought to be very interesting, Phil.
Yeah, now look, fellas, get this plot. Miles Standish is the captain of the soldiers in Plymouth, Mass., and he knows plenty about fighting them Indians. But when it comes to clinching with a blonde, the kid ain't half.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, Captain Standish sees this beautiful doll, Priscilla. That's me with my curls combed out. And I'm sitting by the window in my cottage spinning a wheel.
What are you doing, playing roulette?
I don't know, don't say.
Isn't that awful?
Anyhow, Phil, don't tell us the plot now. You'll spoil the surprise.
What a character. Oh, Mary, would you mind telling our beautiful young pilgrim maiden to put down her spinning wheel and direct a band number?
Why don't you speak for yourself, Jackson?
Oh, go. Go ahead and play, will you? Hold it, Prissy. Come in.
Telegram for Mary Livingston.
Right here, Bud. Give him a tip, will you, Jack?
Give him a tip.
Well, it's your program.
Okay. Here you are, Bud.
Oh, goody. A ticket to Miles Standish.
Get out of here. Every time I look at his head, I want to play tic-tac-toe. Who's the wire from, Mary?
It's from Mama. Dear Mary, program coming in fine. How can Jack have the heart to shoot a duck when he walks like one?
Well, the old battle axe is still punching him out. Belly Laugh Barton gave us that gag. Play, Phil. Why did she have to buy a radio? Was This Time the Dream's on Me, played by Pilgrim Harris and his Plymouth Rocks. Plymouth meaning the boys have landed musically, and rocks meaning I wish I had some. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as we announced last Sunday, the football season being in full swing, tonight the Benny Athletic Actors will present their annual drama of the gridiron entitled He Fumbled the Ball, or Who Tickled the Tackle? (Laughter)
Now, as usual, I will play the part of Dennis. Dennis, I wish you'd get here on time.
I'm sorry I'm late, Mr. Benny, but I couldn't find a place to park my car.
Dennis, you don't have to drive around the streets all day. There's a parking lot next door where you can leave your car for 15 cents.
How do you know?
I heard about it. I can go along with a gag. Now, where was I?
Say, Mr. Benny.
What?
I heard a broadcast last night that made my blood boil. It ought to burn you up, too.
Why, who was funny? I mean, what, what do you mean?
Well, I was over at my girl's house necking with her, and she got bored and turned on the radio.
Well, naturally. So?
So we listened, and there was a guy on the air that sounded just like you, and he even used your name, Jack Benny.
Dennis, that was me on the air last night. I was doing a special broadcast for NBC's 15th anniversary.
Then who played the part of Don Wilson?
That was Wilson himself. And if you'd have been with us, I'd still have to explain it to you.
Gosh, was that really you and Don?
Certainly. We did a comedy act. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Gee, it was so lousy, I couldn't believe it.
Look, kid, you just didn't get the idea of our act. We were very good.
Then why did my girl turn off the radio and go back to me?
I don't know. What a kid. And now, ladies and gentlemen, getting back to our drama, I will play the part of Flash Benny, the famous football coach of Flatfoot College.
Oh, Jack, why don't you let someone else be the coach? You don't know anything about football.
I don't, eh? Let me tell you something. When I was on the team at Waukegan High, they used to call me Tiger Benny.
That's because you scratched everybody with your long fingernails.
They called me Tiger because when I played, I was a snarling, vicious animal.
Like on payday?
What was that, Dennis? What was that?
Watch out for those fingernails, kid.
Oh, quiet. Now, let's get back to our casting. Phil, you're going to be right end. Dennis, you're going to be left end. And Don...
Yes, Jack?
You're going to be everybody in between, so loosen your belt. Now, Mary...
You mean I'm going to be right guard, left guard, right tackle, left tackle, and center?
Yes.
Well, I must be quite an actor.
Take it any way you want to. Now, Mary, inasmuch as we're short of men, you'll have to play on the team, too.
I'm not going to be a man.
You are, too.
I'm not going to wear football pants.
And you're going to wear football pants.
They better have lace on them.
Never mind.
Ooh, what she said.
Dennis. No use talking. I must have a talk with that kid. Now, I'll play... Now, Dennis, did you ever see Our Wilderness? You must see it sometime. Now, our play, ladies and gentlemen, will go on immediately after... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Well, what is it?
I was looking at those ducks you shot yesterday, and you know, boss, they're pretty small.
Yes, they are small.
In fact, they ain't ducks at all, they're pigeons.
Look, Rochester, I ought to know what I shot. What makes you think they're pigeons?
One of them's got a message on his right leg.
What?
Just took Manila. Signed, Dewey.
Dewey?
Boss, those birds are going to be tough.
Oh, some kid must have put that message on for a gag. I still insist they're ducks and we're going to have them for Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
Now, take them out of the icebox and dress them.
I'll have to wait till you get here, boss. They're so full of buckshot, I can't lift them alone.
Well, then ask Mr. Billingsley to help you. Where is he?
He took the message and he's flying to Washington.
Well, for heaven's sake, stop him. Stop him.
Too late now. He put the electric fan on his head and jumped off the roof.
Oh, my goodness. And what happened?
His feet are sticking out of the rain barrel.
Well, get him out of there. I'll be home soon, so hang up.
Okay. So long, boss.
So long. Oh, say, Rochester, I've got good news for you. The next time we go duck hunting, you won't have to swim out for them. I'm buying a dog to do it.
Thanks, boss. I was getting tired of chasing that ball anyway.
I just did that to keep you in practice. Goodbye. Of course, if I buy a dog, I'll have to get a doghouse and a license. Sing, Dennis. Then if he bites the mailman, I'll be in trouble. Go ahead, kid. I have to think that over.
Slowly falling on the leaves, the birds were hushed in every tree. Suddenly, so sweet, so strong, down from the hill came a song. I heard a lonely shepherd playing. It was a haunting melody. I heard the music clearly say. That he was happy as could be. He played and he played. The world was forgotten. Like castles in air, my every care began to fade. La 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 la.
A Shepherd Serenade sung by Dennis Day. Very good, Dennis, and quite a novel arrangement. Say, Phil, I noticed you put a harp in the orchestra for Dennis's number. And the harpist is a most attractive young lady.
Yeah, she goes with my guitar player.
Oh, the harpist and your guitar player. Is it serious?
Nah, they're just stringing each other. Ha, 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 it's a Lulu.
Oh, Priscilla. Mmm. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our drama of the gridiron entitled We Can't Lose, or We Can't, eh? The scene is Flatfoot College in the town of France. The first half has just ended in the annual game with Meatball Tech. And Coach Flash Benny is giving his team a pep talk in the locker room. Now, listen, men. In this next half, we got to go out there and fight. You're playing like a bunch of jellyfish. You've been out there 30 minutes, and what's the score? I ask you, what's the score?
Notre Dame 7, Northwestern 6.
That's the trouble with you guys. You're not concentrating on this game. Now, I don't want that portable radio out in the field while we're playing. It's confusing.
Well, I'm doing the best I can, Coach.
Listen, Livy. All during the game, you've been tackling Meatball's quarterback and slapping him in the face. What's the idea?
That's Jim. The rat never sends me pretty flowers.
Never mind the romance. Just stick to the game.
You said it, Coach.
And you, left guard, right guard, left tackle, right tackle, and center. A fine game you've all been playing.
None of your lip or we'll walk out, won't we, fellas? You're darn right. Yes, you said it.
Now, cut that out. And you, Dave.
Yes, coach?
Every time you get the ball, you fall down. Why don't you run?
I keep tripping over the lace on my pants.
You're wearing the wrong one. Now, look, men. We've still got a chance. The game isn't over. All we got to do is get rolling. Why, the score is only...
65 to nothing.
65 to nothing?
Hey, when did we get a nothing?
We started with that. Now, come on, men. I'm going to play with you this next half and show you something about football. We'll win this game, or my name ain't Poison.
Here we are, folks. The score is Meatball 65, Flatfoot nothing, and the second half is about to begin. Meatball is already on the field, and here comes Flash Benny and his Flatfoot team.
Jello, jello, hey, 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 best dessert in the USA. Flavor never goes away. Put it in, and it's there to stay.
Hooray! Ah, listen to those cheers, folks. There must be 18 people here today.
There's more than that on the team.
Oh, go shoot a pigeon.
Those were ducks. Darn that guy. Now, men, we've got nothing to worry about. I'll call the signal. Dave will carry the ball and crash through for a touchdown.
Who, me?
Yes, you. We're depending on you, Dave. You're the best player on the team.
That gives you an idea, folks.
All right, men, let's go.
Here we go, folks. Meatball's about to kick off. Flatfoot's lining up to receive. And there's the whistle.
Well, there's the boat, the Catalina. On your toes, man.
Well, there's my boat, folks. So I'll now turn the microphone over to that famous sports announcer, Mr. Raymond Radcliffe.
Thanks, Captain Henry. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Raymond Radcliffe speaking.
Oh, fine.
I will now describe the last period of this thrilling football classic.
Classic?
Lefty Wanfield of Meatballs making the kick. And there goes the ball. Flash Benny of Flatfoot receives the ball on his own 30-yard line and is nailed in his whack.
Well, I didn't make much gain that time, fellas. But how can I with a fur ball?
Your toupee fell on it.
Oh. All right, men, this time we'll pull our famous hidden ball play. You know how it goes, Dave?
No, hum a little of it.
It means that you carry the ball. Now, come on, men, line up. This is our chance. Signal. Hey, Wilson, pull in your left tackle a little. You're offside. All right, signals. Ralph Ram, Rigger French, Scrunch. Hike. Boom.
It's a Kawasu play. Flash Benny grabs the ball and reways it to Howard. No, it's to Wilson. Wilson waddles to Day. Day grabs the ball and look at that fellow once.
Run, Day, run!
Day is crashing through the line. Look at him one, look at him one! It looks like he's off for a touchdown. He's 11 yards from the goal. And what's this? He's tackled. Day is thrown on the 3-yard line and he's knocked.
Oh, that poor kid.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. He's out cold. Look at him laying there. Day, speak to me. Say something. Say something.
A twuck hit me. Get the license number.
Oh, for crying out loud. Play, Phil.
Here's an unusual dessert, friends. It's unusually delicious. It's called Hawaiian Sunburst, and a grander-looking, grander-tasting dessert never decorated a table. Picture a brilliant mold of rich red raspberry jello surrounded in a sunburst effect by juicy wedges of golden Hawaiian pineapple. Sounds mighty good, doesn't it? And nothing could be easier to make. Simply dissolve a package of jello imitation raspberry flavor in 1 1/2 cups of hot water. Then add 1/4 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 cup of the juice from the canned pineapple slices. Chill in individual molds, and in serving, circle each mold with a wedge-shaped piece of canned sliced pineapple. Now, most grocers are featuring canned pineapple and raspberry Jell-O all next week. So get them both tomorrow and treat the family to this swell, distinctive dessert. Just remember, to enjoy this dessert at its best, be sure to use Jell-O, because only Jell-O's new locked-in flavor gives you all the flavor, always.
This is the last number of the seventh program in the current Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. I want to wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving. Say, Mary, I'm having a big Thanksgiving dinner Thursday at my house. Would you like to join us?
Who's coming?
Well, there'll be Robert Taylor and Barbara Sandwick and Clark Gable and Carol Lombard, Mr. and Mrs. Henry Fonda, and the Fred McMurrays, and maybe Moe Lee.
Him, you're sure of.
Yeah. Good night, folks.
You know how delicious, how downright good Jell-O is. Well, you'll feel just the same way about Jell-O puddings. Three luscious, creamy puddings that are made by the same people who make Jell-O. There's Jell-O butterscotch pudding, simply brimming over with the buttery brown sugar flavor of golden butterscotch, and just as smooth and rich as the homemade kind that Grandma used to make. Yet how easy and inexpensive it is. Tomorrow, when you order Jell-O, ask for Jell-O puddings in all three flavors: chocolate, vanilla, and creamy golden butterscotch. Jell-O puddings are just like Grandma's, only more so. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI, Los Angeles.